Hello and welcome to a Pop the Trunk with a guest version of the Three Bid League podcast. As always, I am Tyler, joined in person by my co-host Matt for the first time this season, and joining us via the beauty of technology, the man from A10 Talk, the man who puts together the parlays that win you money, Chris Pyle. Thanks for joining us, Chris.
Glad to be here. Glad to be a UD fan this morning.
Yeah, it was a pretty great day all in all for the A10 and what was the biggest night of the conference as a whole. A lot of games against Power 5 schools, but the reason we have you on, the biggest story of the weekend, is Dayton taking down Cincinnati for the first game in, I believe, 13 years between the two schools, but a comfortable 14-point win for the Friars, and all three of us had the pleasure of being at that game. But just going into it, Chris, what were your expectations for the Friars? I think we all knew this was going to be the most important game over the next several weeks for the team. And just, I don't think any of us could have expected a 14-point victory.
Yeah, you're right. I don't think we thought that was going to go like that. And if they were going to win the game, it was going to be something close. Going into the game, I think everyone who has watched this Dayton team from the beginning of the year and also owns a KenPom subscription was worried about the rebounds, right? Like Dayton just, for whatever reason, can't figure out how to get defensive rebounds. Teams we play would get offensive boards. It was almost like we played like junk teams that just threw up junk and would come down, you know, knowing that we can out rebound them, right? So just go and get, that's how we get the ball into the paint. We're going to shoot junk and get the rebound and get easy buckets, because that's what it's felt like for a while, especially against like Houston. But so that was my biggest worry. And then the other worry was, or at least not the worry, but like the other thought was really a more positive one of like, you know, Cincinnati hasn't really played anyone like with a pulse. And other than Xavier, and the only time they played a team that was like from a, you know, a more reputable conference, like a good team from a power conference, was Xavier, and they lost. Every other team, they played teams in like the low 100s and 200s and 300s. And the only other game that was close was against Howard. That was in overtime. So on the road. So that was the only thing that was kind of like, I was holding out hope for, was like, you know, Cincinnati really hasn't been battle tested a lot, and Dayton has. And Dayton has actually, in those close games, come out with wins every single time. So that was like the only positive that I looked forward to, was like, hey, if we can kind of get this into a, you know, one possession game, I really like our chances, because our guys have had a lot of experience, right? So, but overall, I mean, the biggest worry was rebounds, right? So.
Yeah, and it was a justified worry. They got smacked on the offensive glass. Cincinnati hauling in 20 of a possible 48 offensive rebounds. Like, that is an abysmally bad performance. And yet, it didn't matter at all. If that changes, if Dayton's little cold spurt from about the 10-minute mark in the second half to about the 5-minute mark doesn't happen, they win this game by 25-30. This was a thorough domination in my mind. And I think the biggest part, and we saw this against Northwestern, St. John's, LSU, they're playing these power conference teams, and Daron Holmes is just simply better than any player that their opponents have.
Yeah. And what's funny is you mentioned that, and I was reading a tweet from like, or a series of tweets from like, I think a beat writer for Cincinnati or for UC Hoops. And he said something like, I was reading back on his live tweets from last night during the game, and he was stating how, you know, UC has just not played anyone like Daron Holmes as a big man. Like, they have strong, and I agree with him, like, they definitely have like athletic, talented big men on their team, but those big men for the Bearcats had not played anyone like Daron Holmes yet. And I feel like I feel like Cincinnati thought, and Wes Miller going into the game probably thought they had a great matchup there, right? Like they had a guy where they didn't need to do what most teams do, which is double him down low, right? Make someone else beat you. And they, you know, I felt like Cincinnati probably thought they had a guy or guys that can do that. And I think they, you know, they effed around and found out, right? Like that's kind of the story of the game itself is they kind of, you know, they didn't read that matchup well and Duran took advantage.
Yeah, it kind of feels like in just going into the A-10 season as we continue to project Dayton, it seems like Cincinnati would have been one of the few teams the Friars have played that could match up with Duran. They had two starters at 6'11 and 7 foot, and it really didn't slow him down. I think we can say Holmes might have had the two best games of his career back to back, also dominating against Troy. So doesn't really seem like too many A-10 teams can match up with him particularly well. But I think the other huge story of the game is just Toby Elvis continuing his massive hot streak, setting a second consecutive career high, this time with 27 points, including 14 for 14 from the line. What in particular have you seen from him differently the last two games where he's just been much more of a scoring threat compared to the first eight games of the season?
I think he's just figured out how to get to the hole, you know, how to drive in the lane. He looks like he has a plan when he has the ball, right? Like he doesn't feel like he's more of, because I think a lot of times, this season, especially when Malachi Smith went out for the season, we kind of thought it was going to be him and or Javon Bennett that has to take over that role. And we were going to lose maybe a little bit of scoring because Kobe Elvis got to run the point, right? But the last two games, and I was at the Troy game too, and I thought both games, he just, like, when he got the ball, he made his move. Like, he didn't sit and wait around for something to develop and then maybe try and then, you know, make a play. He, once he got the ball, he had already, before he even got the ball, he had a plan of what he was going to do with it, right? And that just comes, like, I feel like confidence and also experience. Like, he's played on this team for 3 years now. He's an upperclassman. So it just, the confidence and just the decision-making ability has just, I feel like, just made him a better player and more confident. I mean, and speaking of confidence, when he just dribbles up the floor on a one-on-one with no one else back and he just pulls up for three and nails it, like, that's just confidence. That's not even like, because like anyone can shoot, all these guys, they're Division I basketball players. They can all shoot threes, right? For the most part, or they can pull up and shoot in a practice or in a scrimmage or whatever, but it takes like real confidence and real leadership to really be like, yeah, I'm going to do this in a game. Like, I feel it, you know, to recognize the momentum and be like, I got this. I got the great matchup. And when he pulled up and got it, I was like, man, he might go for 30 tonight. Cause like, if he's doing that, you know, you're not going to stop him. So for me, it's just the confidence and just the, you know, he's kind of had this playing ability where it's like, you know, a good plan now is better than a great plan tomorrow. That's what General Patton once said. And I feel like that's kind of been his MO, just go with it and go get what you want. Right.
Ever since halftime of the LSU game, he has been in just headlong attack mode. He's going at the basket with a fervor game in, game out. And I think you hit on one of the best points. He's still, because he always is going to just take tough contested shots when he's in the paint. That's just Kobe Elvis. But I think he's doing a better job of giving himself makeable contested shots rather than crashing into a guy, recklessly chucking the ball like he did on that end of the shot clock three that the Cincinnati crowds started taunting him airball on. He then proceeded to hit like his next eight foul shots and missed the chance of the nine Cincinnati fans who showed up to that game. But the other piece too, this was more so prevalent in the Troy game than against Cincinnati, but all of a sudden he's starting to make his open shots again. And he was shooting just abnormally awful on his jumpers, like at a rate that you knew that the law of averages had to come back for it. But That's what makes all of this seem potentially sustainable to me. And now as we start to look at this team going forward, am I wrong to say that Kobe Elvis is really just starting to establish himself as Daron Holmes' number one backcourt sidekick and as a guy who very, very well could be on an all-conference team come March?
Yeah, absolutely, man. I mean, it just all comes with this team with confidence, you know, just wanting to take what's theirs. And especially for Kobe, for Kobe Elvis, I had to distinguish that, right? You always like forget, oh, there's another Kobe. But yeah, for Kobe Elvis, the sky's the limit for him. I mean, he's got all the tangibles to be a really good guard in the A-10. And you could probably name, we could probably just sit here and play the game name dudes in the A-10 over the past years that you and I have all seen. And most of those guys would probably be guards, right? Just this league has produced, especially at the point guard level or shooting guard, has produced just awesome guards. And he's making a name for himself to be the next line of whenever you play name dudes with a bunch, you know, for the A-10, like Kobe Elvis is going to be a guy that's going to roll right off the tongue. And, you know, it's, if he keeps going like this, especially since he's been a tough matchup the last couple games, you know, you could see him on a first team, and we've seen it. We've seen two players from the same team get on the first team all A-10 list, especially if we think what Dayton could do in conference play, if they're playing like this. But yeah, I mean, no doubt this dude can make the all, I mean, at least second team right now, if you had to put it, but he could definitely make first team along hopefully with Daron, right?
So I think we can definitely say Kobe Elvis has put the A-10 on notice with 51 points over the last two games, but I think Dayton in general has gotten the A-10's attention. And after the big win, they jump up to 30 in the net, the highest ranked team out of the conference right now. And really for the first time in 2 years, assuming Dayton doesn't blow a home game over the next 2 weeks, which you shouldn't assume anything like that, but yeah, we have a team with a legitimate at-large case right now. And that's something that Dayton is no stranger to over the last 15 years, where they've had a successful non-conference and then things don't go as well in the league. Outside of the rebounding issues that we've already talked about, is there anything else specifically that makes you nervous about whether Dayton will be able to keep their successes up and avoid the bad losses that are seemingly inevitable in the A-10?
I think for me, it's got to be turnovers, right? This team, at least under the last couple seasons, has had a little bit of a turnover issue, and a lot of it is mostly non-steal turnovers. Now, this year it's gotten better. And last night, if I'm not mistaken, they only had six turnovers, which is unreal, which is great, right? But normally what we have seen out of this team the last couple years, as each game there's like 13, 14, 15 turnovers, and a lot of them are non-steal turnovers. I mean, last year they had 9.8. They were like 276 in the country. The previous year before that in 2022, they were 244 in the country. So, and those are really the two seasons where we've had this team, right? Where we've had all these guys, or at least the main guys of Malachi and the two Kobe's and Daron and Kamara to some aspect. But it's gotten better over the last couple games. However, that's just the one thing that I just hope doesn't regress over the next, you know, couple games, especially since they have two. I mean, people are going to laugh when they see the opponent name, but at the same time, you can't assume anything with the Dayton team, right? So, yeah, the turnovers, although it wasn't an issue last night, I would say is a pretty good thing that you hope doesn't get back to what it was.
Yeah, Oakland and Longwood are both top 100 in the net right now. So two games that are certainly not just going to be rollover ones. Although if you're a tournament team, which as we've been talking about here, Dayton certainly has the look of, those are games where you take care of your business, if not handedly, just enough to not drag your net down from a win. But on the flip side, let's take out Daron Holmes. Let's take out Kobe Elvis's massive performance here. What is it about this team to you? If they make the NCAA tournament, what is the biggest reason besides the way that those two guys are playing right now?
I mean, I feel like it's got to be Kobe Bray, right? Considering from being a starter on the team last year to seeing two transfers come in, and because I mean, Javon Bennett technically got it over him. They could have gone with Kobe Elvis and then started Kobe Bray right after the Malachi injury, but they still went with Javon. And considering Kobe Bray is coming off the bench for this team, I feel like that shows a lot of leadership. It shows a lot of confidence, and it shows that, you know, he's a team player, and that everyone on this team, especially the guys that have been here the last 3 years, have the common goal of whatever it takes, win the games you need to win in order to make the NCAA tournament, because I believe they all feel they should have made it the last 2 years. I mean, I understand the first year they were together, 2 years ago, you know, they were a young team, you know, three bye losses, but they knew they were good. They beat Miami and Kansas. So, you know, I feel like this team this year is very focused. And Kobe Bray being a, you know, a junior and a third year player, and a veteran on this team saying, hey, I will sit the bench to make sure that, you know, that's what's best for the team, you know, as instead of being a starter. I think that says a lot, especially since he has a beautiful stroke. Last night, he went 4 for 5 from three, which is unreal. He's one of the best shooters probably in the country, but, you know, we'll save that for another discussion for another day. But if they're going to be a tournament team and actually win, at least win a game, right? I'm not even going to think about all the different things that could happen, but if they could just win a game, it's going to be because he comes off the bench and gives them very quality minutes, both offensively and defensively.
Yeah. And with that 4 for 5 last night, he goes up to 51.7% from deep on the year.
That's unreal.
Among guys in the top 20, he has 60 attempts. The next closest, 32. It's a lot of guys who have just had some big games on low number attempts that are keeping Kobe Bryant from being the best in the nation. And at this point, is he still just shooting the ball hot, or is this just not that far off from what reality is going to be?
Yeah, I don't know. That's a great question. I mean, we're 10 games in and he's shooting 51%. So, you know, what do you think? I feel like first of all, he has a beautiful stroke. I mean, we have all seen it since he was a freshman, and he barely played his freshman year, but his stroke is just, and fundamentals of the game are just so pretty. And not to mention, he has like the same thing with Kobe Elvis. He has a lot of confidence in his shot. I mean, I feel like when he picks his spot on the court, he knows like right away, like when I get this ball, I'm pulling up. I don't care if there's a guy in my face, right? I don't care. Like, I'm going to pull up because I trust my shot. I trust my form. And at this point, I feel like it's justified because he's shooting 51% from three on the season after 10 games, which is, I mean, it's unreal. I mean, I would love to see, hopefully Jablonski puts out something about, you know, just 3-point percentage and how and what he's been to UD compared to past players in UD history. But I mean, it's got to be up there, right? Like with the Brian Robertses, the Jalen Crutchers, or whoever, right?
And so I think overall, what we can talk about going into the season, Dayton fans knew NCAA tournament was the goal. And sitting at 8-2 with a top 50 strength of schedule so far, they've put themselves in a good position, which I will be honest, I don't think I was expecting this much success early in the year. But just overall, and maybe it's one of the points we've already talked about, what to you has been the biggest surprise in a good way for this Dayton team that you weren't expecting going into November?
You know, that's a great question because I feel like there's so many different things that are surprising me about this team. Number one, I think just positively, the offense and how well, considering how much most fans complain about the pace of play of the team, how well the offense is just working. It just, I mean, yeah, maybe have a slower adjusted tempo, but it's very effective. They have a 56.4% effective field goal percentage. They're 24th adjusted efficiency in offense, 10th in the country in 3-point shooting. I mean, the free throws, my God, 28 of 30, they may never lose a game again. Like, if you do that, right? Like, and that's where I feel like, you know, we knew the offense could be good because we have Duran and Kobe Elvis is a scorer and Kobe Bray can shoot from three. But we knew those guys can do that, but it's more so, I feel like they have great compliments from the transfers this year. Like Nate Santos has been a great get, a absolutely great find by Anthony Grant, and Enoch Cheeks. I mean, I feel everyone saw him last year against Robert Morris. He led the league and he led Robert Morris in scoring against UD at UD Arena. And he was a bench player. Like, that was a great get. Javon Bennett. I mean, you see that he played at Merrimack and you kind of roll your eyes a little bit and go, why are you grabbing a guy all the way from the MEAC, right? And then you see him on the court and he's diving after balls and he steps up right into a point guard position when the leader of the team kind of, or one of the leaders of the team gets out for the season. And it's almost as if nothing changed, right? Like, he has just stepped in and just taken reins. I feel like they're in spurts. Isaac Jack has had some great minutes off the bench. I don't think last night was the game for him because there were so many athletic bigs for Cincinnati that really there was no spot for him to be in that game, unfortunately. But like, there was still, there's some games where like, you're going to get kind of that, just a big hoss of a big or a center in the game. And there's Isaac Jack ready to be that guy that can defend that or go against that. And then last night we saw a lot more of Patagimus than I thought we would see as a transfer. And for 13 minutes, I know he didn't contribute too much, but I thought defensively he was pretty good. And you know, sometimes that's what you need from a guy, is just to go in and give some good minutes defensively because you think he has a good matchup against some guys. So the transfers, I think, have all worked out to be really, really good for this team this year. Surprisingly, I thought the defense was going to be really, you know, not really lose its touch. Considering Malachi has been out for a lot of his UD career and the defense hasn't really taken a hit, you know, it kind of has a little bit this year. It's not at, they can't pressure the ball as much. Last night, I thought they were excellent, obviously, but they're not producing as many turnovers as I liked. They're not rebounding very well on defense. So, you know, I would love to see this team get a little more after it on the defensive side, kind of like what we saw last night, but obviously that was one game. So, you know, going down the stretch, especially in A-10 play, I would love to see this team get after them more defensively, like what we saw last night.
Yeah, I think one of the biggest issues with what you're talking about, not pressuring the ball in those continued defensive rebounding struggles, or at least in part to the fact that Enoch Cheeks has been struggling with some foul issues the last few games. Last night, especially, if his minutes are down, he's really the unsung hero of being able to do some more creative things defensively with what he does attacking ball handlers. And the fact that he's one of the best rebounding guards in the nation, and just not having him out there, it doesn't seem like much. And when you just look at box scores, it seems like, quite frankly, he's just simply the sixth best guy on this team. But you could see his impact not being out there last night.
Yeah, I mean, I saw early on, he got a second foul early on. They actually announced that wrong too. They gave that to Duran and Enoch stayed in the game. And I think the bench was confused. And I was too, because I thought the foul was on Enoch and they called it on Duran. And I was like, oh, they announced that wrong and they told him wrong. So you know, this could be bad if they don't take Enoch out, because he could end up with his third foul by accident. But they figured it out, obviously, and corrected it. But yeah, you know, he's put on some tough assignments, and you know, it is definitely a little bit of a defensive, it hurts defensively if he's out early. But you know, in past games, I feel like we've seen when he goes out, yeah, there's a little bit of defensive lapse. And last night, I really didn't feel like that. Like, I felt like guys stepped up where they needed to when he got out, especially Kobe Brea. Like, I thought he was very good defensively. But yeah, I feel like, you know, if Enoch's, I thought he was going to come in and be a really good shooter, which he is, but he has actually been a very good lockdown defender. And if that's got to be his role, then so what? Then so be it. I mean, that was Kyle Davis's role for pretty much all 4 years. And I think that dude lived up to that hype. And I feel like that could be the same thing with Enoch Cheeks here.
He's got a little Trey Landers in him too.
He's got a little Trey Landers. Yeah, that's a really good comparison. I was thinking more of like just defensive tenacity. Like, cause I feel like Kyle Davis always had that, right? Like, he was just mean mugging and then, you know, picked your pocket and then, you know, jeered at you about it. But yeah, I feel like he's got that, but with the Trey Landers kind of build. And I could see that coming out of him over the next couple of years.
Yeah. So we'll get ready to close it out here, but obviously a great start to the season for the Flyers. What do you think UD needs to do the rest of the season to feel pretty good about getting a tournament berth? And what are your personal expectations? Do you think the Flyers can continue to play well and eventually reach their goals of making it to March Madness?
Yeah, I mean, they got a great head start, right? And the best part about this non-conference, assuming, I'm not going to try to assume, but assuming, theoretically, that they beat Oakland and Longwood, you know, they are set up to where, yeah, maybe they can take a quad three loss. We don't want them to, right? But they can take one because they have multiple good wins, right? So SMU just moved up into the quad one. St. John's is very, very close to quad one. We'll have to wait and see on LSU because they're not doing so hot, but they might get a bump from being in the SEC and playing a really tough, you know, conference schedule. And the Cincinnati one should stay a quad one just because they also might get the bump from being in the Big 12. So I think they've set themselves up really well to not have the expectation that they need to go 18-0 in conference play, especially since many of the away games that they have on their conference slate are quad one games or quad two. Because the conference itself this year has actually gotten a lot better overall, especially from the bottom. So my expectation, I'm going to say I want the Flyers to go, is 15-3 get them in the tournament? Maybe it depends on the losses, but I would love at least 16-2. I think that 16-2, win the conference, then you're not sweating in Brooklyn.
I would go the other way. History has taught us if you're sitting around 30 in the net where they are right now and then walk into a quality mid-major conference, which the A-10 has gotten back to being this year, I'm not even sure they need to win the title. Something around 14-4 is going to get them into the tournament. And anything past that, then it does start to depend on the losses. Do they just lose to a few good teams? But 15-14 wins in conference, Dayton's going to be in the NCAA tournament, and that's the biggest thing that became clear out of last night.
Yeah, and the one thing I do want to say, too, is I feel like there's a lot of fans, and I heard it around where I was sitting, too, last night. You know, they're focusing a lot on the net, a lot on the KenPom and stuff. And I feel like, especially with net, I feel like the way Dayton's playing right now and the way their season has shaped out, especially in the non-con, we don't really need to worry about it, right? Like, if you're winning games, you're not hurting the net. And I know there's the whole margin of victory and stuff like that. This team, the last 2 years, has really hurt itself by just not beating the teams it's supposed to beat, right? The Austin Peas and LaSalle's and even UNLV last year, George Washington, Rhode Island, you know, like just teams that they should beat. And now we're at a point where this season they haven't come close to losing a bye game. They haven't come and they've won some games that, you know, maybe they shouldn't have won. St. John's, maybe that was kind of, I mean, they played really well, but I don't think many people thought they were going to beat St. John's. They were only like a, probably like a 2-point favorite against LSU. They weren't supposed to win last night. I don't think they were supposed to beat SMU. And they won those games. And against all the bye teams, they haven't even come close to losing those. They've taken care of business. And I feel like we get so obsessive about it, about the net, because of the conference we're in, right? Like there's just not a lot of quality. We have to really, you know, dictate everything about how we operate the net. But if you just win games, especially in the A-10, like with the way their season, I mean, if they did go 16-2 or 15-3, what would that their record would be? It would be like 20-27 and what, like 26-5, 25-5. That gets you in the tournament. So, 25-26 wins gets you in the tournament. And I mean, my expectation is that they win the conference. They need to win the conference, I feel. Just for the guys and for these fans who have waited a while and are very hungry to get back in the tournament, to win the conference and kind of be what everyone expects them to be, which is win the conference most years. Right. So yeah, that's my little take on the net is, you know, if you're just winning games, the net will take care of itself. Right.
Yeah, it's been a long 3 years that Dayton's been able to fight through a non-con with a few quality wins and no bad losses, but they've done it again. And speaking of quality, Chris Pyle putting out quality stuff on the Dayton Flyers, on plenty of stuff, A10. Where can everybody find you?
So on Twitter, I am at Parlay Pyle. You can find me there. I do write occasionally for A10 Talk. So since basically my wife and I, we have twins, and basically we have committed a little more time the past couple of years to, you know, being parents on the count of we don't want to go to jail. So that's kind of what happens when you have children. So I've taken a little bit of a step back to be more of a dad to toddlers, but if you want, go search for me on A10 Talk. I've written some things over the past couple years, and interact with me on Twitter. I'm always there to talk some things or post some funny memes or anything like that. So hit me up.
All right. Parlay Pyle, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, guys. See you later.
All right. Another thank you to Pyle for joining us there to talk Dayton. But now we're going to go into one of our favorite traditions, and that is our annual holiday gifts. So, Matt, what are you giving out first?
I feel like the A10 in general, they've been good this year, so Santa should be pretty nice to them. Much better than last year, that's for sure. We have a lot to celebrate this holiday season. I think we'll just go ahead and start with Dayton to get that out of the way, since we've already done a lot of talk over the Flyers. As Tyler and I already talked about, and Chris, they've had a really successful non-conference, and with a net at 30, they're in position to get an at-large if they do well in the conference season. So I think my gift, I mean, I'll just give them a bicycle, because that's an awesome gift when you've been a good boy this year. But we're going to add some training wheels on it, just because we don't want the Flyers to fall down and hurt themselves. As long as they don't take a terrible loss and they keep winning most of the games they should, they're going to have a chance in March. And that's what the goal has been from the start of the year. We'll see how long that can keep up where they avoid bad losses.
Yeah, that's an important one. I'll go to the other big winner of last night, and that was UMass. Blowing a big lead early to West Virginia, and then this young team steadying themselves, being able to take out the Mountaineers. They won those last 10 minutes, 29 to 22. A huge, huge, huge performance off the bench from Robert Davis. Goes 6 of 8 from 3. And one of the striking things that really jumps off the screen when you're watching the Minutemen is just the incredible talent that him and Jalen Curry have on that bench unit. But they're two really inconsistent guys who very often play like the freshmen they are. And as UMass starts to go forward into conference play, if they're going to prove that they are a top half in the league team like the net says they are, I think it would just really help them if they were able to somehow get another veteran guard. Not even necessarily a starter, but just a bit piece. I think about like if we could slide Greg Dolan over from Loyola, or funny enough, 5 years and a head coaching change later, even just Trey Wood, who's playing limited minutes on George Mason. But this is such a young team, and you look at the conference schedule where they start out at Dayton, home against Duquesne their first week. I actually think those games are flipped in order, but playing two of the best teams in the league, going up against Grant and Clark, Rozier, Williams, the Drames, and then Holmes, Elvis, Brea, Cheeks, all of these dudes who are just going to be mentally ready for a war. And UMass on the other side, you're looking at Cohen, Cross, Diggins, most of the time Keon Thompson, and then just all of these young dudes that you never know what you're going to get out of them night after night. And UMass is going to surprise the team or two with their talent. But there's also going to be nights where they are going to look like the young pups that they are. And so I just want to give them a nice 22, 23-year-old guard who's been around the block who could help them out.
Yeah, that would be good, and hopefully UMass too will give us a Christmas gift because they're going to be the one A-10 team in action for a few days when they go to Diamond Head, and we'll get a little bit more information on the Minutemen just since they haven't played the toughest schedule, but so far I think it's better than both of us have expected. But another team that I really want to see show some toughness in these more difficult games, the Richmond Spiders, who analytically have been playing like one of the best teams in the league, although as we talked about on our last episode, they're just struggling against good teams and staying in the games but haven't been able to pull out a big win. They're currently 0-5 in KenPom A and B games, which basically translate to quad one and quad two games. And that's going to be important because the Spiders have definitely the toughest stretch of their season coming up. Their first nine games in conference are way more difficult than once you get into February. So my Christmas gift to them, they need to start getting some motivational speakers, maybe attending some TED Talks before these big games. I mean, over the next several weeks, they're going to be going at Duquesne, at Davidson, they're hosting Dayton, and then really wrapping up the tough stretch of their schedule going at VCU. And that's just going to be the key. If Richmond continues the season how they've been, they're probably going to dig themselves a hole, starting out 3-6, 4-5, and then maybe ending up around 500. And if they really want to contend as a double bye team, they're going to eventually need to pick off some of these games. So just something to fire them up before these real challenges. And hopefully it'll help too. They're going to get Devonnie Hunt back at some point, but yeah, just an interesting season for the Spiders where they're blowing a lot of teams out, but haven't been able to get it done when it's mattered most.
Yeah, another team in a similar situation. George Washington's 9-2, albeit against a pretty easy non-conference schedule. And I just want to get them an old school military academy drill sergeant to come in for the next week of practice. Maybe they can borrow one from the Naval Academy as a thank you for stupidly letting them hang around in that game and almost steal it from the revolutionaries. But the biggest flaw for this team is their non-steal turnovers. One of the 50 worst teams in the country in that regard. They're still just so sloppy with the ball. And just like UMass, part of it has to do with them being a young team. But their leader's not helping them out.
The three highest usage rate guys in terms of when they're on the court between James Bishop, Maximus Edwards, and Benny Schroeder. And then you can also throw in Jacoy Hutchison off the bench, all with turnover rates above 20%. You just can't be getting that from so many guys who have the ball in their hands as much as Bishop and Edwards do for this team. And if GW is going to win some games against tougher competition, they're going to have to calm it down and just be a little bit more disciplined.
Yeah, another young team, and discipline always going to be important for GW, although I think that's another team that's surprised us in some ways. For my next gift, I'll go over to VCU, and maybe they should be the ones giving gifts and thanking the courts for letting Joe Bamisil play, because now it looks like the Rams are getting even closer to full strength and a lot of optimism after they comfortably beat Temple over the weekend. I think the biggest issue, though, for VCU that's held them back this year, they just haven't protected the home court in ways that we've seen since they've been in the A-10 and even before that in the CAA. So far, the Rams have lost three home games, including two epitomes of brutality. And if VCU wants to win the A-10 or come close to doing so, they're gonna probably need to go 8-1 or 9-0 at home in the conference season. So my Christmas gift to them, I know there's been a little bit of a meme in the VCU community over some of the hype videos that are playing in the Siebel Center, so I just get them some new like video editors, get some new footage of the Rams just to fire up the crowd in these home games, because if everyone's just going to be laughing at the scoreboard, that doesn't make it as difficult of an environment that they're going to need this year.
Yeah, these last few months, a home game at the Siegel Center, about as life-altering as a mid-trip drive through North Dakota. That's how easy it's been for opponents to win there compared to the past. But I'll go with a place that gives you home court advantage for the opposite reason, because it's just so weird to play there. And that's LaSalle. And for them, as the NCAA just gets sued and has to overturn all of this stuff, I'm going to give them a magical chance to give Mamadou Doucouré another year of eligibility. We knew this team was going to hurt from losing their three front court starters, but as good as the Drames have been over at Duquesne, they haven't missed them too bad, thanks to this big step that DeShawn Shepherd has made, just simply playing the guards more, and the fact that Andreas Marrero has started to play a lot better in the last few weeks. But Rokas Jotus, after looking better to start the year, has really, really struggled in December. And it was so apparent in the Miami game where they're playing Fassasi at the five in crunch time, basically out of necessity, despite the fact that he was so undersized against Nurchad Omier and just getting killed on the boards. I really like Fassasi, but he's going to struggle to play stretch five for long pieces of games against some of the better bigs in this league, at least as a freshman right now. They need another option to pair with Jotus, who they know can just go down low and just beat some guys up. So it was hard to appreciate what Mamadou Doucouré brought to that team. I think LaSalle fans are really appreciating it now.
Yeah, they could use him, although I think we should give LaSalle some credit real quick. In what was a nice Saturday for the A-10, the Explorers hung in there against a ranked Miami Hurricanes team, and I don't think we really expected them to be so close in the second half. So a little bit more size and physicality would have helped, but I mean, overall, that was a pretty impressive performance. Another team, though, that really needs some size, St. Louis. I think there have been a lot of vocal critics of the team this year after just coming out of the gates slow. But Travis Ford made a comment a few weeks ago about how the team needs to just continue blocking out the negative energy from fans or any critics. And since then, St. Louis has actually won two consecutive home games against top 100 opponents, Hofstra and Louisiana Tech. So it seems to be working, and I feel like the Billikens haven't played quite as badly as you would let on, just because they've set a high expectation over the last several years of being a double bye contender. So yeah, just get them some big headphones to keep blocking out that noise, and I don't think it's going to be a great season, but if they keep playing like they have the last week and a half or so, it could be at least a middle of the pack team. And also just shout out to Terrence Hargrove too, who led a pretty miraculous comeback on Saturday against Louisiana Tech, scoring 11 points in the last 30 seconds and making two threes in the last, I think, 7 seconds. Just a crazy game from him, and maybe the momentum spark that St. Louis will need going into a big road game at NC State.
Yeah, that was an astoundingly fun close from the Billikens. And in basically any other moment, allowing Terrence Hargrove to rush the ball up the court down two with 6 seconds left would have been completely nonsensical and possibly grounds for Travis Ford's firing. But on that night, it was the perfect move, and he hit the most spectacular shot of his career. But I want to go back to Philly here. And if we're giving LaSalle a gift of center past, I want to give their crosstown rival St. Joe's the gift of center future. And as we look at this team, how transcendent Eric Reynolds has been so far this season, how great the guards are playing around him. And we've praised Rashear Fleming for the tremendous growth that he's made. Just think back from January now to December. But if Reynolds leaves at the end of this year, St. Joe's, despite the young talent they're bringing back, just won't be quite the same. This is the year. This is the Hawks' chance over these next 2 months to try to get to an NCAA tournament. And so I'm going to bring them the gift of the future form of Rashear Fleming, whatever he's going to be in the next year or two with continued development. And you could even sub this out for the future of Christos Asundoko. St. Joe's is going to have an incredible center at some point in the next year or two. My money's on Fleming. It certainly could be on the freshman as well. But I would just want to see this fantastic backcourt with the fully finished older version of their center.
Yeah, that's a good one. And I mean, St. Joe's with another huge win over the weekend, just dominating Iona from the opening tip-off. Another team that's had a big man really stepping up that we didn't expect, Reed Bailey for Davidson. I was kind of shocked to see he's averaging over 5 rebounds a game. And
Finally!
yeah, we didn't know if it was possible for a 6'11 guy to do that. But just looking across the board, like Reed Bailey playing better for Davidson. Coach Hera's been improved. Skogman's taken a much bigger role. And overall, I think for Davidson, you could probably make the strong case that they lost their two most talented players from last year's roster, and they're just better across the board, up about 30 spots in KenPom. My gift, though, to the Wildcats, I feel like this is always a team when they're at their best, the team is better than the sum of its parts. And so we'll get them a cookbook to continue, coming up with some new recipes to make the best out of the pieces they have and, use it into a formidable offensive system. But we're going to make this a healthy cookbook because I'm a little worried that the Wildcats are getting fat off some of these easy games. Really, Maryland's the only difficult win they have. Well, they did beat Charlotte on the road, but two non-Division I games, which is a little bit ridiculous for an A-10 team. So they're going to need to whip themselves into shape, maybe cut out some of the candies and pastries over the holiday season so they're ready to go in January.
All right, I'll slide it over to Loyola here. And I can't figure out the exact player that they need. So I'm just going to let them take care of that and just give them the ability to make a trade. This team, they're just struggling across the board with stuff. They're turning the ball over too much. They can't offensive rebound despite the fact that they have five good rebounding big men out there. They're giving up threes at a ridiculous rate. And I'm just not sure what the answer is at this point. And the one thing that's pretty clear is, despite the talent up and down this roster, the answer might not be there. And this is like an NBA team at this point. The Ramblers just need to trade off some of their depth for a surefire starter. A good 3-for-1 trade would do this team so much good so that the back half of their rotation isn't worried on a given night whether or not they're going to play. So that they just have a few centerpiece guys to really build the team around. That's what the biggest difference is between them and Duquesne. The Duke's also got a ton of guys scrounging for minutes every night. But you know, no matter what, Grant Rozier and Clark are going to be out there. And the rest of those guys are just fighting to fill the roles around them. And they can lean on those dudes. Other than Norris and, when he's healthy, Alston, I don't know who Loyola wants to lean on a given night. And it's just a lot of mixed pieces, and it's tough to build chemistry that way.
So you're saying they don't need to keep playing a 14-man rotation that changes game to game?
And yet somehow barely includes Ben Schweiger.
Yeah, it's an interesting dynamic there, but we'll see if they ever figure it out in the A-10. My next team, we'll go to St. Bonaventure, who took a tough loss to Florida Atlantic after leading for most of the first half. But overall, it's still been a much improved Bonnie's team from last year. Top 100 in both offense and defense. So not a ton of weaknesses, but they really need to get Daryl Banks back on track. And only had 2 points in the loss to the Owls this weekend. Down to just 9 points a game on 32% shooting, so he really hasn't been a big factor. And the Bonnies have gotten away with it because their other guards, specifically Mike Adams Woods, has been awesome for most of this year. But if St. Bonaventure is going to reach their ceiling and be a contender, I think they need Banks to get back to where he was last year. So my gift, let's give them the rim from the Gainbridge Fieldhouse in Indianapolis, where St. Peter's began their miraculous run against the Kentucky Wildcats. Something to get his confidence up and remind him of the player he can be, because we just haven't seen anything remotely close to that version of Daryl Banks this year.
All right, that's good timing, because I wanted to keep it in New York, too. With another team that's unexpectedly struggling on the offensive end, although certainly as a team they did not have the same level of expectations as Banks did, and that's the Fordham Rams, and they could use a lot of help. But their biggest bugaboo, they're bottom 25 in the nation in free throw shooting, 63.5%. I don't care how little scoring talent this team has, you got to make your free throws. And that 63.5% number is below a guy who was graded as a notoriously awful free throw shooter. So I'm going to give Fordham just a week of lessons with whoever it was that helped Daron Holmes work on his free throws this summer, whether it was an old high school coach, maybe a trainer, maybe someone over at Dayton. But Holmes has gone from 57% at the line as a freshman to 67 last year to 70 this season. The most impressive part, against quad one and quad two opponents, Holmes is shooting 78% this year. Just like the Shaq theory, in the biggest moments, he has been just flat out really good from the line. And Fordham doesn't even need to be really good. They just need to be mediocre. If not, they're going to keep letting games slip through their fingers.
Yeah, the Rams need to figure something out, and unfortunately weren't that close in their local rivalry against the Johnnies this weekend. But my last team to give out a gift to, the George Mason Patriots, who at 8-2 have had a successful non-conference season, although I'm not really sure what to make of the team after getting just beaten down in their one truly difficult test against Tennessee. I was hoping for a little bit more fight there, but overall, the stats don't show any major weaknesses, and I'm interested to see how that shakes out once they start playing more difficult games in the A-10. I have no concerns about the rim defense. I still think that's probably the best in the conference, but the one area defensively they could get better on, giving up just a lot of points from the three-point line, both a lot of attempts and then also allowing opponents to shoot over 34% from there. And just a little bit concerned if that's going to continue to go up as they play a difficult opponent. So they need something to arm the perimeter a little bit better, maybe some sort of ant or roach repellent, just some raid spray to, you know, secure the perimeter, keep those bugs out, and hopefully stop giving up so many threes.
Yeah, another team who's really one bugaboo is also that they give up a lot of threes, but we're not going to focus in on that. I'm getting Duquesne a nice contract attorney because they have played one of the wonkiest non-conference schedules you'll ever see just from a timing perspective. One point they played 3 games in 5 days. Last week they took a 4.5-hour bus trip from Huntington, West Virginia back home and then played again less than 48 hours later, and then took 9 days off. It's just been weird for Duquesne, and Keith Dambrot will tell you, it's just tough to schedule. I think you can tell from his expression in the press conferences that he's frustrated by that thing, and at this point, he's also probably frustrated with people asking him about it. And that's the life in college basketball now. You got to take games where you can get them. Except for this. On January 31st, the Dukes are using up their last half week bye in A-10 play to play Chicago State at home. Chicago State is sub-300 in KenPom. They're sub-300 in net. Nothing good can come out of that game. And they somehow beat Northwestern last week. It's a game that gives you no value in January. It would have been nice if it was a warm-up 6 days into November. But now the Dukes are setting themselves up for this three straight Q4 games in 8 days landmine. Home Fordham, home Chicago State, at Rhode Island. Three straight games without a break where only bad things can happen for the Dukes. And it would just be better for the team to just have a six-day breather there. This game makes no sense on the schedule. They got to find a way to get out of it. And honestly, the only way anyone's going to have any fun out of it is if we officially make this the Mark Titus Bowl and the loser has to hire the commentator as their next head coach, as he has publicly begged to be considered the last time that both of these jobs were open.
Yeah, it's a weird game. I guess Duquesne just wanted a chance against Chicago's Big Ten team, because otherwise it's hard to explain it.
Here, I'll go into my last one since I have the 15th team here.
Okay.
And we truly saved the last for last here, because I am only certain at this point that Rhode Island is a pillow fight team. I think everyone else, you can make an argument, they will find their way out of it. And so I'm getting them one of those little old-timey bedtime hats for the team. You know, like Ebenezer Scrooge wears, or the dad in 'Twas the Night Before Christmas. Kind of looks like the Santa thing. Any fans of Always Sunny in Philadelphia, it's what Ben the Soldier's dressed up as when they're trying to sell him in Vigoron. Just get them the nice little hat. Because they just got to start to feel comfortable with the fact that their season at this point is probably just going to come down to being able to swing an upset in the pillow fight, because they are destined for the first round of the A-10 tournament.
Yeah, so nothing to even help out the Rams, just accept their fate. I think that's probably fair. And over the last couple weeks, I feel like we could have made different cases for teams being the worst. But yeah, going into the conference, Rhode Island just on a really cold streak, and things are not looking good for the Rams. But my last gift, for the A-10 as a whole, since we have an odd number of teams now, we have to do this. Look, we'll just say, we've talked about it already, but for the zero-bid league folks out there, it was a bad Saturday for you guys. I mean, the A-10 only lost one game as a favorite, which was Loyola, and let's be real.
They should have been favored anyway.
Are we that surprised? I don't think we are. But we had a couple upsets, including UMass, St. Louis, some other quality wins like Richmond beating Charlotte by a decent margin. You know, a lot to be happy about. And so my gift for the A-10, this is the first time in probably since the weird COVID 2021 year, where going into the conference season, we're going to have two teams with very real at-large chances. Dayton, who we've already covered at length, and St. Joe's up to 44 in the net after blowing out Iona. And this is just me on a hunch, and I don't have the evidence or the stats to back this up, but they're really getting weighted down by that embarrassing Texas A&M Commerce loss, and if that is the only bad loss for the Hawks as we get through the season, certainly I don't think it's possible for them to have something worse than that, then maybe the committee gives them a little bit more benefit of the doubt. But the Villanova and Princeton wins are looking really good, and the Hawks are certainly passing the eye test. So, with two potential at-large quality teams, my gift for the A-10, just get them a ski mask and a large bag with money signs printed on it, because they're going to need to rob a bank and steal a bid to get us to three. I think this is probably the best chance since that weird COVID season. And if Dayton and St. Joe's both get to 14 wins, I think with the amount of quad one and quad two opportunities in the league, it would be hard to keep either one of them out.
Yeah, and this might be the year for it. Duquesne lingering. We talk about Darryl Banks' struggles. We also know that out of nowhere, on, say, semifinal Saturday, Darryl Banks could just drop 38 points on one of those two teams. VCU getting Bairstow back. There are some potential bid thieves lingering if Duquesne or Bonaventure doesn't just go out, win this league, and get themselves in anyway. And you mentioned the weird COVID year. I think we kind of forget St. Bonaventure only played two non-conference games that year.
Mm-hmm.
So really the last time, I guess 2020, we kind of felt like VCU was in good shape and then they crumbled. But it's possible that the last time the A-10 had a second potential at-large team as good as St. Joe's was all the way back in 2018, where we had a top 25 Rhode Island squad and a St. Bonaventure team that came into January in pretty good shape.
Yeah, I mean, really, I would compare this, if you're telling us right now, oh, there's no chance of this. I mean, 2017 was kind of similar, where I believe it was Dayton and VCU having strong non-conferences, and then Rhode Island ended up winning the A-10 tournament and getting an 11 seed. This year, the A-10 is probably a little bit stronger across the board than those 2 years, so it's all going to come down. I think Dayton and St. Joe's clearly have the best chance, just based on where their net ranks are. If they can both pull away from the pack a little bit, then anything could happen in the A-10 tournament. And I wouldn't say we should expect three bids, but it's certainly not out of the question.
Yeah, and at this point, if Dayton doesn't shoot themselves in the foot and then continues their longstanding tradition of not winning the A-10 tournament, we're certainly not getting one for back-to-back years.
Yeah, I'd be very surprised if it's one. And I think we're going to start to see that a little bit more now that Dayton should elevate themselves. I wouldn't be that surprised to see them a little bit higher in bracketology and not just in as the auto bid for the A-10. So something interesting to monitor. Obviously, a long way to go, but at least we're going to have something to talk about with the tournament over the next 3 months, and that's something by this time last year we pretty much gave up all hope on getting an at-large bid.
Yeah, the gift for all of us has been the fact that the last 2 months have been so much better than those first 2 months last season, and honestly even better than we were at this point 2 years ago. Davidson still hadn't beaten Alabama. That was the one thing that really started to turn around a pretty bleak start to the season that year. And then before that, it was the COVID year. So it's been a long time since 2020 that just fans of the A-10 in general have had this many good things to get to witness. And one of those great things, one of the best gifts, is the fact that you all continue to listen to this show. And we thank you for that. Be sure to go give us 5 stars on iTunes if you've enjoyed it. Be sure to reach out to us on Twitter at @3BidLeaguePod. Be sure to just check back on this feed. We're going to have some conference play previews coming for you. Maybe next week, certainly 2 weeks from now. Keep an eye out for that. Everyone, just have a happy and wonderful holiday season, no matter what it is you're celebrating. We hope you guys have enjoyed this basketball season so far. Hope you enjoy what's going to kind of a sneaky good week here leading up to the Christmas break. Hope you enjoy the holidays with your family. It's a good time as an A-10 basketball fan. We're certainly enjoying it. Hope you all continue to do so as well.